again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the, I was going to call it a monstrosity. It's some kind of monstrosity. Doug, the Big Red Bus is made of cardboard. It's a cardboard box that we are both in with a hole in the bottom of it, using our feet as wheels. The color is crayon red. It's powered by our 40-something-year-old legs. We're a kid's Titanic, what say you?
I don't feel as bad about it as you do, I think, based on your description.
Really?
My Lord. So here's what I would say. The Bulls are a 500-caliber team. If you want to look at like games within 5 points, they're, I think, 3-7. Games within one possession, or sorry, no, if with 5 points, I want to say it was something like, I looked it up as 5-13, and within one possession, 2 points, they were 3-7 or overtime. And so those games are all really like 50-50 games, and if you just assume they won half of those, they'd be about 500 or more. And, you know, we now have two in a row where we should have won the game. And the last 2 minute report confirmed that we lost the game unfairly. And I think that's the third time that's happened this year. I mean, like, you flip the three games that are just called directly by refs the other way. You got like odd stuff like the Atlanta shot, you know, that went in. You know, so they've just not done well in these really close games. And so the record is a lot worse than their competitive level has been. It doesn't really change anything in terms of making the playoffs or where they're going to go this year, which is nowhere. They're going to have a lousy year. But they're better than their record, you know, so there's that. But on the flip side, so what? Like, who cares? If they're actually a 41-win team, like, would you really feel a whole lot differently about them this year?
Well, if you look at some of the ways they won last year with some of the miracles that DeMar DeRozan provided at the end of the games, they were about a 41-win team when all was said and done at the end of the season.
Yeah, I would have said the same thing. You know, I agree.
And so, I mean, I expected them before the season to win 44 games. That was my prediction. I am concerned that, you know, this team that was so dominant at the beginning of last year, and I outlined the reasons why we shouldn't have expected that this year. Obviously, we're missing Lonzo Ball, but we did have the great Patrick Williams, you know, who wasn't there while we were dominating last year, rejoin the team. And the East is way better, significantly better. And we saw that firsthand with Donovan Mitchell scoring 71 points, which was arguably the best performance I've ever seen from I've never seen anyone score that many points against the Bulls because that was a record. But to me, it was just unbelievable. I understand the officials had a lot to do with it. But, you know, that said, he was incredible, and he deserves all the praise that you can possibly give on an individual. The guy's been absolutely awesome for that team. He's completely transformed them into, my opinion, a legit contender. What I find so frustrating about these losses, though, to these teams is we still have, you know, large swaths of the fan base that bring up the fact that we don't have Lonzo Ball. And you look at all these good teams that we played, starting with the Bucks that we did beat, and some of these other teams that we lost to, they've all been missing guys. Cleveland wasn't healthy. Cleveland was missing some key players who were just as important to their team as Lonzo Ball is to ours.
And more so.
We played the Bucks. I mean, they were missing Holiday, who was a fantastic player. It's like our big three have been healthy for pretty much all year, with the exception of Levine, who's only missed a few games. To me, there's no excuse. There should be absolutely no excuse. And for as bad as the officials were, all you had to do was fundamentally box out your shooter, something that you learn and we tell 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. And it wasn't the coach's fault. If you look at the replay, he attempted to box him out, Patrick Williams. He just did an awful job in that endeavor. He's not a good rebounder. He's a horrible fundamental player. And I'm not going to say he's a bust. He's a disappointment for the 4th overall pick. He'll have a long career and disappoint many fan bases with all the talent that he has. What say you?
I don't think he ever had that much ability. Like, I actually don't think he's a bust. I think he's about who I thought he would be after watching him for a pretty brief period of time, which is a guy who looks like a 3-and-D type player as he develops.
He's not even that good of a D guy, though, Doug.
He's not that good, but I think he'll be. He's gotten a lot better. I think he still struggles. He's a little bit of like Zach LaVine in terms of his basketball IQ, I think. Like he makes a lot of bad reads at times. But his individual defense has gotten a lot better. You know, he's a good shooter. I think he still has a good floor. I just don't think he has a high ceiling.
I don't know if you saw that Twitter I asked you to watch. I made a home video that I posted on Twitter after the Bucks game, before the Cavs series. And, you know, I was just reading an article for Pat Riley where he's talking about rebounds is equal to rings. And I've been harping on this issue ad nauseum for weeks, for months, really. And, you know, I've been derided by the likes of our friend, mutual friend Mark from Australia and others. But what I know, and they don't know, is that there are few things in basketball, Doug, that are more frustrating than playing perfect defense for 23 seconds and then allowing an offensive rebound. It's team karma killing. And our four sucks at the basic fundamentals required to rebound. Why don't you tell the audience, if you could, what you saw in that video I highlighted for those of you who haven't seen it.
I am amongst those that didn't see the video.
I told you to watch it. Gosh dang it.
I don't remember you telling me. I don't even know what you're talking about.
I texted it to you. Watch this before. Let me tell you what you see.
Okay. You tell me what I would have seen.
Let me tell you what I saw.
Just ruined the whole show.
So the Bucks game, I was coming back from work from Milwaukee, so I was not able to. I was actually listening to the game. I did not actually see the game. And so obviously when you listen to it on the radio, you have an idea what happened. But then when you sit down and actually watch it, and I talked to several people after they won the game, you know, before I actually sat down and watched it on TV, and they all gave me the, you know, Patrick tried hard. He played great defense on Giannis. And then I sat down and watched the game, and I was appalled. He did not play great defense. First of all, he tied a season high. If you're tying your season high, you're not playing great defense. I'm sorry.
I disagree. I think he did well on Giannis. I think you're wrong.
I highlighted several plays that you should go watch, because it was basically showing straight line drives from Giannis where he blew by him. He had a couple moments, of course, but overall, again, he had a season high. You don't praise
someone.
But he
did it super inefficiently.
For not stopping anyone.
Like, if he took 100 shots and had a season high of 50 points, it'd be like the worst offensive performance ever.
Yeah, but that's
not
what
happened. You can't just look at the points. Yeah, look at how many shots. I think it was like 38 shots he took to get like 40 points. That's awful.
Yeah, he still has season high.
Yeah, but again, it was an inefficient thing. Like
he's not a good straight line defender. He's not like against quicker defenders. He's not good. He doesn't have lateral.
Wow, he didn't shut down Giannis, huh? Only forced him.
No, he didn't shut him down.
Only forced him to like 1 point per shot. Way, way, way worse than his norm. But we're gonna bitch about him on that. That's the like
you're gonna die bitch on him, because I thought. If you would have watched the video I highlighted on Twitter, you'd have a different comment. I'm sure you would.
I mean, I watched the game.
Well, you didn't watch it close enough. You know how many offensive rebounds they had in that game more than the Bulls? We're absolutely destroyed on the offensive boards. And a lot of that had to do with the inability of Patrick Williams to box out.
What I'm not talking about him boxing out. This is, you're now changing the topic. I'm talking about him defending Giannis.
Well, rebounding is part of defense.
It's generally not considered part of defense. Like, I'm not saying
that's a mistake.
No, I mean, it's separated out into its own category.
It's actually the most important part of defense because it ends the defensive possession.
Well, I mean, like, it's part of the overall side of defense. But when we're saying he defended Giannis well, we're not talking about whether he rebounded well. Like, that's not like this. I mean, like, I get what you're saying. Like, yes, the most important part of a defensive possession in the end is getting the ball back and starting your offensive possession. If you don't do that, you failed, right? But that's not what people mean when they're talking about, oh, he played good defense. Like, so, like, in the context, you're now getting into a semantic debate between two different things. Like, when people say that, they're not talking about that other thing. So, yeah, I think everyone agrees that Patrick Williams is a god-awful rebounder. Like, no one is arguing that. So, when people say it's a good defense, no one argues that. Everyone knows he is just absolute horseshit as a rebounder. So when people say he defended Giannis well, that's not what they're talking about. And no one would reasonably think that.
Don't you think that's a kind of important skill for your four?
Fine. But everyone agrees he's lousy at it. Like, you're just bringing it. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
Like, thank you, choir. I mean, like, like, for listening to my sermon. Like, Like, yeah, I agree with you.
It's a major problem with this team, and he's it's the
not,
guy.
So rebounding is not a major problem for this team. The Bulls are seventh in the league in defensive rebound percentage, which means they rebound defensively better than 22 teams and worse than six. Did I get that right?
They allow way too many offensive rebounds.
Well, they're better than 23 other teams in the league at it.
I don't know where these stats are coming from.
Well, it doesn't matter. That's just so you know, they're better at it than 23 other teams in the league. So, no, they're not bad at it. It's not a weakness.
I think you're wrong.
Well, it doesn't matter what you think because I'm quoting objective
I'm telling you now. I think you're wrong.
You can tell me you think 1 plus 1 is 7, Fred. They're a terrible rebounding team. It doesn't
make it 7. Several players in this team are terrible at rebounding, and it's
killing them. Several players are, but the team as a whole is good at defensive rebounding. Fuchs is a good rebounder.
Io's a good rebounder. DeMar is a good rebounder.
And see, that's why, as a whole, the team is good at rebounding, and rebounding is not a problem for them.
Well, what do you think the biggest problem is then?
The biggest problem is their talent fucking sucks. They've got three offensive, one-way, empty stat players. That's their biggest problem. They pound the shit out of the ball. They don't pass. Man, I'm swearing a lot. I apologize. I mean, you saw the last two games.
Yeah, it's a family show.
Go on. Should do better. I'll stop swearing for this show.
There's families that actually gather around the fire and listen to the
I'm sure. So let's I'm bring sure. Our, but let's it's our an empty. We'll bring our game. But it's they're empty stat offensive one way players that don't fit well together. That's the biggest problem. Did you look at the tweet I sent you?
I did. It was the.
Did 15, you understand it?
Somewhat. Could you explain it for the layman?
It was a tweet and it was discussing and it was. Based on data from cleaningtheglass.com. And it was discussing the Bulls' defensive efficiency at different play types and then how often those play types are ran against them. And so what I thought was really interesting, and it explained a lot to me, the Bulls are terrible at defending everything. All right? Like, they're just, like, awful. They're in the bottom, like, 15% or so at defending everything in the league. But what they're really, really elite at is stopping the high-efficiency play types opportunities. So the Bulls were number one in the league in forcing half-court defensive situations. They're 24th in the league in defending a half-court defensive situation. But they're number one in the percentage of plays run against them in the half court. Now, so as you know, a transition play has much, much higher efficiency than a half court play, like universally, just radically more. So
yeah, the Bulls aren't. The defense has time to set up against the half court.
So the Bulls are terrible at defending transition, too. They're also one of the worst transition defensive teams. They're also one of the worst teams at defending putbacks. But they allow.
Can we stop this for 1 second?
Sure.
That's inexcusable that they're a poor transition team because they're not a good offensive rebounding team outside of Drummond.
Well, they're poor. They're poor defending transition is what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's my point. There's no excuse for that because.
Well, sure, there is because they have no good defensive players.
Good point. All right.
So what I mean is, yeah. I mean, like if you think if you're going to defend a transition, you probably want like a fast, athletic, shot blocking center probably helps you defend transition plays.
Sure.
But anyway, what the Bulls are amazing at, and I think maybe this is what you're misconstruing, is they're amazing at not allowing transition plays to occur. They get back, and they force teams into half-court plays. And they do that more frequently than every other team in the league. They have the most percentage of their plays run against them in the half-court of any team in the league. And so even though they're not good at defending the half-court, being bad defending the half-court is way better than allowing a lot of transition plays, even if you're good at defending transition plays and good at defending the half court. Just that play type is so much more efficient. Even if you're good at it, it's still worse. And so
can
even
I counter?
The Bulls, you can in a second, but just I'll wrap it up in 1 second and let you go. And so that's why the Bulls' overall defensive metrics end up being kind of average-ish, is it's because we're forcing so much half court defense. Not because we actually have average defense. We're actually really bad at everything with the lone benefit of like we're not turning the ball over so much and we're not allowing a lot of transition offense. That's really it. And we're not allowing a lot of offensive rebounds. So there's not a lot of putback attempts. That's it. Those are the reasons why the Bulls defense looks average statistically, even though they have all these bad defenders and even though they're really pretty much bad bottom of the league defending everything.
I would counter that for a lot of transitions are started off a long rebound. And the Bulls are dead last, I believe, in the league in terms of three-point attempts. They don't shoot any threes. Therefore, they're not getting long. The defense is not getting long rebounds and opportunities to play in transition.
Yeah, the Bulls that could are be too.
They're a team that takes a ton of shots in the post with Vucevic and in the mid-range with DeMar. And DeMar is constantly attacking the basket, constantly drawing fouls. If you're drawing fouls and shooting free throws, you're not going to be dealing with transition because the second free throw goes in, you have plenty of time to get back. Like, there's a lot of reasons for it, and I don't think they're good ones. Like,
yeah, I'm not saying it's good. All I'm saying is,
yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, the Bulls' defensive rating for a long time, it's kind of slipped now, but for a long time, it was like pretty average. And you'd be like, how do the Bulls have this kind of average defense with such poor players? And the answer was really they don't. Their defense is really terrible. The only thing that makes it average statistically is that they're just giving up fewer transition offensive opportunities. Not because they can actually defend anything. They can't defend anything.
I'll also say that Caruso is an excellent defender. Like, he is an absolute A-plus defender. I think it's reflected in all the lineups where the Bulls are.
I agree with that.
I heard it on the CHGO show. I think it was Will brought it up. The Bulls lineup with Caruso and Io. And then DeMar, I think it's Vooch, and LaVine is actually top 15 in the league. In the league, in terms of net rating. And I think you're basically replicating there, you know, with a poor man's ball, but with Io, defensively, he is pretty good. Io. I'd say he's probably the second best defender, at least perimeter defender on the team. So you're in the other night against the Cavs in the first game in Chicago, I thought that backcourt was exceptional in the fourth quarter in terms of defense. So those two guys help, I think, overall. But you're right. I mean, the team doesn't have any defensive stars, any guys that I think I would even qualify as average outside of Caruso and Io to some degree.
Yeah. I mean, either way, it was just an interesting thing I thought that kind of, to me.
Yeah, it is.
To me, it showed me why, even though they look really bad defensively, why their overall aggregate numbers were not as bad as what the eye test would tell you. And it explained it in a way that made it obvious to me. I'm like, yeah, okay, that totally makes sense. We're not really good at defending anything, but we do force teams into the half court a lot. And like you said, maybe for reasons you don't want to, like you're not shooting enough threes. Drawing fouls, you'd always say is good, right? But not shooting enough threes is like not a good thing, and probably does contribute to that too.
Well, the thing is also too, when I say drawing fouls, the guy who on the team who's far and away the best at doing that is DeMar DeRozan, and he shoots an exceptionally high percentage. So the second one is often going in, and you're able to get back defensively.
The other thing I'd say is schematically, we're a really great defensive rebounding team. You know, I mentioned that earlier. We're an awful offensive rebounding team.
Yeah,
and so schematically, outside of Drummond, we may be deciding that we just want to get back. Like, guys just always go like, yeah, I'll get back, instead of ever trying to get an offensive rebound. And so that does help us defensively, but then it, you know, hurts you offensively. And that can also be another reason, which you may say is like, yeah, it does give us this one defensive thing going for us, but it hurts us on the other side. And maybe also isn't such a great
thing. I don't know if it's that it's an on-purpose scheme that he wants the guys to get back instead of attacking the offensive boards. Because I do see, like, when Green goes in the game, he's much more aggressive at attacking the offensive boards. And some of the backup fours, it's just Williams is horrible at it, and he just likes to jog back.
Yeah, agreed. It can... And Vooch is not a good offensive rebounder, right? He's not athletic enough or quick enough. When he's able to get position, you know, defensively, he's able to do really well rebounding. But he's not someone who's who's quick and moving guys out of his way offensively and whatever. Like, he also probably tends to float back on defense to conserve energy.
He's a good defensive rebounder.
There's no denying that.
He's a rock solid defensive rebounder. And, you know, so that's a positive for Vooch, but
no denying.
Yeah, overall, there's.
I have very few issues with Vooch this year, to be honest with you.
His 3-point percentage, where it's at.
Yeah, 37%.
Is that where he's at now?
But yeah, it's solid.
Well, like I said, it's acceptable.
It's not like amazing, but it's solid.
He doesn't get to the line. He's got 77.
He's never gotten to the line.
You know, like compared to like a DeMar DeRozan.
Sure, but he's never gotten to the line. Like I mean, this is maybe not exactly what you hoped you'd get when you traded for him, but I think this is a pretty good facsimile of what you hoped you'd get when you traded for him. What he's doing this year. Like, last year was an abomination. It was just so bad. But this year, I think Vooch is giving you, you know, like pretty close to what you thought you'd get out of him. And, you know, especially at the age of 32. Okay. I mean, you had to figure he's going to slow down some. Maybe some of his totals are a little less, but that's also based on who he's playing with now, being the third option instead of the first option. But over 50% from the field, 37% from three. You know, rebounding really well, decent assist numbers. You know, I have no problems with what Vooch is doing. I wouldn't have given up ever. I mean, I'm not saying I would do that trade. It's an awful trade, and I wish we could take it back. But ignoring that, like, that's not Vooch's fault. That's our front office's fault. Just what Vooch is doing as a player this year, I think, is fine. He's having a nice season.
So there's four players in the team that have played over 1,000 minutes. Can you name them?
I mean, it's got to be DeMar, Vooch, Levine, and Williams.
That's correct. No, Io's at 948, okay. So he's a little bit short of that. Where is Patrick Williams on free throw attempts?
I don't know. Probably averages like one a game. Like, we played maybe like 40 on the year or so.
He's got 35 on the year. So to put that in perspective, he's behind Derek Jones Jr., who has 36, who's played 360.
I mean, are you going to try and convince me that Patrick Williams sucks?
I'm trying to convince you that he doesn't have aggression. Oh, I guess if some people haven't figured this out by now. Like, free throw attempts to me is a measure of aggression.
Look, you're arguing things everyone agrees with.
Everyone
knows Patrick Williams is lacks any type of energy or assertiveness, and everyone knows he can't rebound the basketball.
I think he should be out of the starting lineup after that last mistake against the Cavs. And I brought this up. I thought
he should have been out of the starting lineup for like the last
loss
forever. Like, I mean, he's playing against minimum caliber guys too. Like, we're debating about, you know, Javonte Green on the minimum and Derek Jones Jr. on slightly over the minimum. Like, both those guys are better than him. You know, it's really a crime how little Derek Jones Jr. has played.
That's the problem.
Given, you know, what he does compared to Patrick Williams. Like, they're just hoping he develops, right? Like, I don't know.
He's only 19, Doug.
I got to tell you,
the
I got to tell you, Fred, yeah. I don't know if I could be any more disappointed in our front office.
And why do you say that?
So far.
I think you could, because DeMar DeRozan was a great trade, dude. I mean, like, the guy's been freaking
so
awesome.
Far.
That's a top.
So okay. Far. I mean, like, one, you sold out your entire future to lose in the first round of playoffs once. Just terrible strategy. But so far, what concerns me. Is that at this point, would you say it's clear that this group is not going anywhere? Like, that's not a crazy statement, right? Like, even Darnell Mayberry came out there and was like, you got to bust up this big three, blah, blah, blah. But let's just talk about Pat Williams, because you're on a Pat Williams kick today. It's obvious at this point that Pat Williams is not the deal, right?
Like, right.
And we refuse to bring in anyone to compete with him for 3 years.
That's true. It's
We're gonna just like go down with the ship on him. And so it's like what concerns me is, and Pat Williams is just one example of this, but there's other examples too, like the big three not meshing well together, Vooch being an expiring and having to kind of like just do something with him or get nothing. I don't feel any confidence whatsoever that these guys are willing to correct any of the mistakes they've made. It was all great and grand when they were busting apart like the Gar Pax stuff, and everyone was like all mad about Gar Pax, and like all the players Gar Pax brought in were junk and they were terrible, and Acme started with absolutely nothing and it was this impossible situation. You know, but like, so it's all great. Like, we got rid of all these guys we don't like. We were frustrated with Lowry and Wendell and whatever. It's easy. Just ship them all out, right? Like, no one cares. No one, everyone's just like, thank goodness that era is over. Close the books on it, right? Okay. Well, so you did that. Number one, if you had done nothing except extend everyone who is here, you'd have a better team today with a brighter future, a better payroll, more future draft assets, a younger average age, and probably the same amount of wins. So one, we all overreacted about that. But two, ignoring that for a second, you now are in a position where you've basically boxed yourself into just a completely horrible spot. And what are you going to do with it? Because I will bet you they are just going to go down with the ship. They're not going to trade DeMar and try and get value out of him. They're just going to let him age out and have nothing. They're not going to trade Vooch, even though he's going to walk next year. Or they're going to double down and extend him, you know, which would be even worse. But they're not going to get anything for him. They're going to just let him walk, or they're going to extend him. And, you know, like, and with Pat Williams, they're just going to go down on that ship. Probably won't bring in another power forward this offseason to compete with him either. So they're still just going to hope if we just keep throwing him 30 minutes a game, he's going to all of a sudden have it click in. Like, I've just not seen any hint of anything that makes me think they're willing to look at this absolute mess they put together and say, you know what, this isn't working. We need to do something.
Well, what bothers me the most about the whole situation, Doug, is when they first came in, all you heard was, and they were relatively inactive for quite a while, and the same answer was, we're going to use this time to evaluate the talent. We think there's talent here. We're going to evaluate the talent. And you look at Wendell Carter Jr. and Lauri Markkanen, who they sent out. I don't know how you, if you're good at evaluating talent and looking at those players, and you look what you sent them away for inferior players, really. Like, any, I heard Zach Lowe state this already, that, you know, Wendell Carter Jr., he calls it the heist. Wendell Carter Jr. was better than Vooch last year. And, you know, by anyone who's got an IQ over 50 will say they'd rather have Wendell Carter Jr. going forward than Vooch. It's like not even debatable.
He makes half the money, too.
Yeah, it makes half the money. You sent him away. Lauri Markkanen, you chose Patrick Williams over Lauri Markkanen to play your four. And you were kind of forced into that in a way because you got Vooch, right? You know, because Lauri can't play with Vooch. You really need a more defensive-minded center. And that's the decision you made after sitting there watching and evaluating the talent internally. I mean, that's part of your skill, is evaluating your team.
Yeah,
they failed in those two.
You spent a year evaluating, and then everything you evaluated was bad. You had three young guys that you inherited with potential: Lowry, Kobe, and Wendell. Right, and you decided to keep Kobe. And at the time, Kobe is coming off. He's off his rookie year, ending the season with a bunch of 30-point games. So he had value that summer. If you moved him that summer, he absolutely had a lot of value. So fast forward, you know, several years later, and of those three, Kobe is by far the least valuable of the three. So you spent a year evaluating, and you were wrong on each single choice you made. You know, good thing you spent the year.
Exactly. The other thing I would also counter is they've been trying to trade Kobe for a while, according to all sources. And I don't have any faith they're going to get any type of return.
No, there's nothing. Who would want Kobe? Who would you get a second round pick, maybe.
I don't think he's really been utilized correctly here. I think Kobe's a better player than where he's at right now. I do. I don't think he's been
played. But it's not someone who's going to contribute immediately. It's probably not going to cost more than the MLE in the offseason, so any team can bid on him, more or less. There's no reason to trade for him in advance.
I just scratched my head why he's not playing more. I don't understand it. I think he's played actually pretty well lately, especially defensively. And I do kind of feel that the front office does have a say. I can only believe that in why Patrick Williams has played so much. Like, I think they have a say with the coaching staff about who should be playing. And I am concerned that there's a negative reason why Kobe isn't playing as much, because he's not in their long-term plans. when he actually deserves, I think, more time.
I don't know. I mean, Kobe's on his fourth year. He's shooting 35% from three this year, 41.8% from
high volume. Field.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
He's not special. 35% from three, like, it's not good. It is high volume, but like, it's not a good percentage. I
will counter though. Where I do find solace is that almost everyone outside of you and me were extremely critical to DeMar DeRozan trade. That is one of the best trades in the history of this organization. Like, the fact that they were able to acquire him for the dollar amount he's at and how good he's been for this organization and this team is amazing to me. And he's underpaid. And he's played at a max level. He made all NBA. I mean, there's no debating that. Like,
I agree, but what are you going to get out of it?
Well,
he's the primary reason, Doug.
He's the best player. He's the best player in his team.
So what?
You know, and we got to remember that he only came here because Vooch recruited him. So
I mean, the thing is, like, and I like, that's a joke, like, I know. I like DeMar, and I'm not trying to turn this into a rant about DeMar, but he's a difficult player to fit other guys around because he can't shoot threes. He's a ball dominant, ball pounding kind of perimeter player that doesn't shoot threes. He's mid-range James Harden, you know, or just tries to get people into pump fakes and draw fouls and whatever. He's successful at it. He's really good. He's super clutch, you know, but like in the end, like, we got him here. If we don't trade him, then to what end did it really matter? Like, if DeMar DeRozan is like an amazing player and we got LaVine and Vooch and whatever, and we end up with 35 wins this year, like, who really cares?
Yeah, but like, I don't blame
like the
DeMar.
Key is, like, I think, no, it's not DeMar's fault. I'm not at all blaming DeMar for this. It's just that in the end, he's a very short-term asset. And so if we are not able to utilize his greatness in the time he's here to actually do something and get wins and be in the playoffs or whatever, then ultimately it's just wasted.
Depending on what you get for him.
Well, that's what I mean. If you're too scared to move him, you know, then we just like say, we just run him out this year and next year and we win 35 games each year, then it was still an amazing signing and DeMar was an amazing player, but it won't have advanced the organization whatsoever because you weren't able to build the right guys around him or whatever else you want to say. But like, the result will still be meaningless.
I think what they're saying right now is they're hoping Lonzo comes back. And I agree with you. Like,
why would you think he's going to do anything if he comes back? Dude's not run for a year. Like, jeez.
Well,
like,
again, this is all hope, and it's amazing. It's been, you're right, it's been a year. My gosh.
I mean, like, after a year, we can start. I mean, we're already having insurance pay his contract. An odd other thing, just so you know, is like, the Bulls might be able to trade Lonzo just in an arbitrage move with some team that wants to save money. Because if they send us some other player, like, insurance pays 40% of Lonzo's contract until he comes back. So it's like they either get Lonzo Ball and he's healthy, or they're only paying a teeny part of his salary. It's kind of like an injury.
Where did you hear that?
That's just how the NBA insurance. Once you miss, I think it's 40 consecutive games with the same injury, insurance kicks in and pays 80% of your contract. So Lonzo is passing him out. So just kind of an oddball thing. Like, he doesn't actually have now the cap hit still counts. You can't reclaim his cap space, but you know, you aren't actually sending money out the door. So
that's my point, Doug. No, nobody's going to take on. He's got two more years left on his contract after.
Yeah, but another team that had 40 million 2 years. So what I mean though is another team. If he doesn't play, another team's only taking on like 20% of that $40 million, so $8 million. Yeah, but if they dump you, so say they dump you like $30 million worth of cap hit. That's also $30 million of real money. You know, they save $22 million, you know, and they take on a little cap hit. There might be like a team that wants to save the actual cash outlay. Maybe. And the other thing, too, is if he starts playing again, then all of a sudden you have a good value contract. He's a good player on that deal when he's playing. You know, so anyway, I'm not saying it's going to work out that way.
I would say
I just found it interesting. That's all. I just thought it was interesting.
I would say it's going to be a miracle at this point if Lonzo Ball comes back as the same player that he was before. It would be almost a miracle.
I think it would be.
And pray for that?
Yeah, I think it would be if he was healthy for any length of time. Like, I could see him coming back and playing well for, like, a couple months, but, like, it's really hard to see him playing well for an extended stretch.
Yeah, it's a shame, too, because, I mean,
he seems like
a good kid, and, you know, he has no
nothing wrong with, like, people get, like, weird when guys get hurt, and they're legitimately hurt, and Lonzo is clearly legitimately hurt, and they start, like, blaming the person and projecting all these negative thoughts on him. Like, I am sure there's no one in this world who wishes he was healthy more than Lonzo Ball does. There's no Bulls fan who wishes Lonzo is healthy more than Lonzo wishes Lonzo is healthy. Like, Lonzo's probably going to lose $100 million by not being healthy. You know, like, no one has more incentive than he does to be healthy and play. So, you know, I'm sure it's killing him. And it sucks. It's awful. It's awful for any player. It's awful for Derrick Rose, you know, when he got hurt, was never able to really come back and do anything again. You know, it was terrible for Bulls fans, but, like, no one suffered more than Derrick Rose. Went from, like, top of the world, you know, to being barely in the league and being, you know, like, scorned by people. Like, so, you know, like, these guys are, they're people underneath, like, you know. So, anyway, I just want to say, like, I don't think anything bad about Lonzo as a person for it. I'm sure he wishes he was out there. But it's just the disappointing reality that this is just what it is. He's probably not going to be.
One more quiz question before we get to a final Twitter poll.
Oh, I can't
like your opinion on. I know it's the highlight of every show. So free throw attempts for the team. I'm going to give you the top three. It's right. DeMar with 306. Zach is second with 142. Let that sink in for a second. Third is Vooch with 77. Who's fourth on the team? I'll give you three guesses in terms of free throw attempts. I don't think you're going to get it.
Fourth on the team. So are we going with totals or are we going with per game?
Totals. Who's total free throw attempts? So I mean, I gave you 306, 142, 77.
I will go with let's see. My first thought would be Io is next.
He's fifth with 43. So not fourth, but fifth with 43.
It's tough because it's like there's no one. Okay, how about
I was actually tied with a guy.
I'll go with Goran Dragic.
Goran Dragic has 36, which is one more than Patrick Williams, despite only playing 574 minutes.
Trying to think of guys. I'm going to say Andre Drummond.
Andre Drummond, you got it on the third one, is fourth on the team in free throw attempts with 48. Oh, my God. He's fourth on a team in free throw attempts, and he's played a total of 417 minutes, which would put him at 10th on the team in minutes. Not good.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking, like, I'm like, trying to think, once you went uncommon, I'm like trying to think of, as a toss-up between me, Drummond and Caruso is my next guess. And I'm like, well, Russo's Drummond doesn't play much, but he draws a lot of them, you know, per minute.
Yep. Caruso has 40. Excuse me. Yeah, 40. Let's go. Next question. This is one of my great Twitter polls. This will be the last one because I need my beauty sleeper already over 40 minutes. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Did you see this? I posted this today.
I don't know if I saw it then.
Okay. Well,
I thought we were going to talk about your Donovan Mitchell tweet.
Okay, but, we'll do that.
Okay, so now I have no idea what's coming.
The 16 and 21 Bulls have endured a number of catastrophic losses.
Oh, yeah, I saw this.
The Spurs, three times the Cavs, Thunder, Suns, etc. this season. Which one of the following was the most disappointing to you? The 114-91 home loss to the Knicks, the 150-126 loss to the Wolves, the 133-118 loss to the Rockets at home, or the 145-134 overtime loss to the Cavs? Out of those four, which one was the most disappointing for you?
I am going to say probably the Rockets loss was the most disappointing to me.
Yeah.
Though, boy, is that a... It's a great list of just gut-wrenching, terrible losses. Yeah. All for very yes. different reasons, right? Like, it's...
Doug, the Timberwolves lost, you got
blown out and destroyed. And the Rockets loss was... But the Rockets loss was like you'd won three in a row and you were starting to get hope again and you're playing like the worst team in the league at home that's trying to lose games and then you lose. Like it was just like that was the one that for me, I think, turned the momentum of like, you know, kind of like flipping your desk or whatever. The Cavs loss was very frustrating, but you felt like you got hosed by the refs so badly that there's a little bit of like, I don't blame the team as much for this. Like you do, they gave up the lead, but God, did they get, I mean, like I normally won't rail too much against the refs, but boy, did that one go against them.
Yeah, agreed.
Multiple calls in the last 2 minute report that went against them that would have saved the game. Multiple.
Yeah.
So, you know, that one and Donovan Mitchell got all kinds of BS fouls, calls in that game. And so whatever, anyway, That one, it was gut-wrenching to watch just because, like, you gave up that lead. But there's a little bit of, like, this was unfair to it as well. Whereas the other ones, you're just, like, losing to the Rockets at home. That one to me was the winner.
Yeah, and the one I highlighted, the first one, was the Knicks. It was the second home game in a back-to-back home game against the Knicks. And if you recall, I mean, that's pretty rare, right? Usually don't play back-to-back home games against the same team. And I've always stated it's very hard to beat the same team twice. And, you know, so they lost the first one, and I think it was overtime. To get beat like that against the Knicks on their home court the second time was just appalling to me. And you're right about the Rockets one. I would say, though, the Wolves loss, for me, to give up 150 points to a team without Towns, without Gobert, was just 150 points. It's just, it's mind-blowing that they gave up that many points defensively.
That was probably my second choice.
Yeah.
For just
and I agree with you on the Cavs, because despite all the refs were bad. It kind of just comes down to me to one player. I mean, if Patrick Williams does a fundamental box out, the game's over. He did a horrible job on that, and he cost the team the game. It wasn't Io's fault who hit two key free throws. It wasn't Kobe White's fault who hit two massive free throws down the stretch. It wasn't DeMar's fault who was freaking awesome again with, you know, getting lost in the shuffle. He had 40 plus again. It was Patrick Williams cost his game, period. You know, so one guy I'm not going to say was totally devastating. You can fix that by getting him out of the starting lineup going forward and getting him down about 15 minutes a game, which is where he deserves to play. But you're right about that Rockets loss, because they did have the three-game winning streak. I was thinking they're going to win this one now with the Bucks coming in. If they could have won that, you know, they would have had a five-game winning streak. But, man, they've lost to a lot of bad teams. I didn't even have the Orlando loss on here at home when Orlando was winless on the road. And that one was kind of a weird game where they lost in the last-second shot.
Every time we play Orlando, it's just heartbreaking. Every time Wendell Carter Jr. just beats the shit out of Vucevic in the game. Every game. Every time. Like if you actually look at Wendell Carter's career splits, his numbers against the Bulls are like by far the best of his numbers against any team in the league.
Yeah. Finally, I do want to throw out a tweet that I had in July 13th of this year. I'll read it. According to ESPN, the Jazz are willing to listen to trade offers for Donovan Mitchell. Would you support the Bulls trading every possible young trade asset? I name them Williams, Io, Kobe, and Terry, and multiple first-round picks to get them? What do you think the fan base with over 800 votes said? Yes, I'd support that trade, Doug. What percentage?
Did you see like this maybe, one? Maybe like 8%?
No, 22%. So okay. They'd be for it. And then my favorite quote on here was some guy, some dope, said out here, I'm not even sure I trade P. Will for him. Can you believe that? Can you believe that somebody said that and you said, I assure you, you should. Wait, where is that? I can't find it now. But you had a great comment there after going through that. I mean, it's just, it's mind-boggling to think how we overrate our young talent on this team. It's like, wow. You wouldn't want to trade all those guys for, oh, here it is. Showtime Bulls said, I'm not sure I would even trade P-Will straight up for Mitchell. Four people liked it. And then, you know, I said, surely you can't be serious in one of those gifts I like to do. And then you had some quote in here, too, that said, if you aren't sure, oh, this is your quote. If you aren't sure, let me assure you that you should do that. But we were the only, we're in the minority quite a bit there, Doug.
I would not, just to be clear, I would not trade every young asset and multiple picks at that time for Donovan Mitchell either.
You would not have? Are you serious?
I mean,
are you
it's
kidding
not
me?
All the young assets. It's just that you would have traded all your picks out to like 2029. And I just don't think Donovan Mitchell plus what we had was enough to go anywhere with. And it was a terrible fit on the roster with the guys we had too. Like if you just add Donovan Mitchell now, subtract Io, Pat, Kobe, like clearly all those guys except for Io, you're useless anyway. So Donovan Mitchell would help a lot, but like where would you be this year? Like maybe on the pace for like 47 wins? Like it just, and then you have no picks forever. No way to get anything else. Like I just think that would be a really tough place. No, Donovan Mitchell, I liked him. It's just really just giving up like, you know, like three first rounders on top of everything. And in some ways it doesn't really matter because we weren't going to top that Cleveland offer for him. Like we weren't going to top that. So I would have given up like a lot for Mitchell and I would have definitely given up all the players, but giving out picks that go out to like 27 and 29, which is what you'd have to do because that's all you had left. That's just so far in the future, you know, to go like not have any picks for like 7 years. It's just, I just don't think you can ever put yourself in that position as a franchise. It's like where the Timberwolves were now. They're like, oh, well, we'll just get Gobert. And then now it's like if it doesn't work for some reason, it's like you're just fucked for like, man, I just said I wasn't going to swear. You're just in a bad spot for like 7 years, 8 years.
I don't know.
Like that's just so hard to recover from.
Donovan Mitchell is a superstar and none of those players I mentioned
He has been better than I thought he would be. Like I thought he was a star, but I kind of had him in my second tier type star. And you know, so far this year he looks like a superstar. So
Oh my god.
I had him as like a top 15 type guy and he's like knocking on the door as like a potential like, you know, like future top 8 type guy. And you know, and so yeah, I think he's amazing. Like I said, I always like Mitchell, not saying but I definitely would have been hesitant not because of Mitchell himself or even because like, I think Mitchell's worth that. It was just all the other assets we had already given up, like, put us in such a position that you're taking on so much risk to give away every single other thing you have left. You know, like, it's really from a, if we had not given up all we already had and we made the same offer for Mitchell, I would be all in. So it really was just, you know, like, what we had given up already that put us in that spot for me personally.
Obviously, the question is, would he fit in with Zach and DeMar? And my counter to that is he's better than Zach. I think he's right there with DeMar. He's probably better than DeMar. He's younger than DeMar.
Yeah, he's better than DeMar. He's certainly younger.
If you can acquire a player who's better than your best two players, you should acquire him, especially for the players I named. I don't know. I was just kind of shocked. Like he's got a proven track record of being awesome in the playoffs.
Yeah. It's just the thought of like another guy who's not really playing defense. Another guy who's going to take a lot of shots where you have a team built around three non-defensive guys who take a lot of shots. Mm-hmm. There's some weird stuff you'd have to figure out there, but whatever. Clearly we wish we had Donovan Mitchell right now, though. Like I said, I'd still be really nervous about having Donovan Mitchell, the rest of this team and not having a draft pick until like 2030.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if you have Mitchell and LaVine and you move DeMar and Vooch for something else right now, you know, like you could fill holes. Like you could figure it out. So
yeah.
Probably would have been the right thing to do.
You build around a guy like that and he's the real deal, man. And it's amazing the talent in the NBA this year. You look at the MVP candidates with Jokic and Tatum, and Embiid has been fantastic, and obviously Giannis. And Mitchell is having an MVP-type season. He's probably not in the top four. You know, yeah. Who else is having a good year?
Do you follow Morton Jensen on Twitter?
No, I don't.
Morton and I go way back. He was a real GM guy before, you know, he became the king of Danish basketball commentary. Yeah. And, you know, so Mort and I, longtime friends, but Mort had a tweet today, which I thought was interesting. And he was talking about, like, just the number of, like, 40-point games and 40-point scores, and just said, like, the level of talent in the league right now is just unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. And I think that's just kind of what you're saying. You know, it's like so many just incredible young stars in the league right now. It's just really exciting league.
Yeah. And we got one of those young stars in Patrick Williams. So everybody should be excited and enjoy Bulls basketball for the remainder of the year. Let's look at the schedule really quick before we wrap things up. Got the Nets, obviously, on Wednesday night, 76ers away. The Jazz, the Celtics, the Wizards, the Thunder, the Warriors, the Pistons, the Hawks. Some tough sledding ahead for the next couple of weeks, I think. But the schedule does kind of loosen up a little bit in January. What do you think?
Yeah, it's really, really easy. You got like these next four games, the Nets, 76ers, Jazz, and Celtics. Those are four, you know, pretty tough games, right? But yep. Then after that, like, man, you got a long way to go with like very few, you know, like tough teams in there. Like, you know, then it's the Wizards, not so good. Thunder, not so good. Warriors, not so good this year. Pistons, Hawks, Pacers, Hornets, Magic. I don't know how many games I just rattled off, but that's probably like eight games that feel, you know, very winnable. Now, granted, right now the Bulls are also not that good. So you can't say they're the favorite in all these games. They're probably not. but it is games like, you know, you have a good chance to win any of these games, right? Like you're not like, oh, wow, how can't we beat these guys? But, you know, the way the Bulls have gone, they're just going to beat the Nets. They're going to lose to the 76ers because we never beat Embiid. Then they'll lose to the Jazz because they have Lowry, and why would we ever beat a player that used to play for us? We did beat the Jazz earlier, though. Then we'll beat Boston because why wouldn't we beat Boston on the road? It just seems like something we'd do. Yeah. And then we'll just like lose a bunch of deflating games to the Pistons, Thunder, and whoever else. You know, because you just can't predict this team.
Hey, man, I got to get some of my beauty sleep. It was great as we take this cardboard box in, talking to you about the beloved. Hopefully we can turn things around, but this has really been, think about the gut punches we've taken this year, DT. It's been a rough year, really, for the beloved Bull. You know, hopefully they can turn around in 2023. But right now, I will have to admit my prophecy is in dire straits right now.
Yeah, 7%. Just one of the 7%, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. 93% is always correct. It's been right on for the most part, but they took it on the chin with this one, no doubt. Unless ball comes back and everything turns around, which would be quite a story, quite a comeback. In
reverse of last season. Start off poorly. Exactly.
That's what I'm counting on. That's what I'm counting on.
All right. Go Bulls.
All right, DT. Hey, man, always good to talk to you, my friend. Until next time, go Bulls.
Go Bulls.